Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a five-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. And we're back with our theme song for this November 29th, 2022 edition of the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. This is Chase, as always, joined by Nick Holm from the Bahamas. Nick, how are you doing?
Chase, I'm awesome. Good to be back home, but nice trip down there to Atlantis. Again, just want to reiterate, awesome fan experience, and it definitely lived up to the hype. So. But also good to be back.
Since we podcast on Friday night, so we had kind of wrapped up the USC basketball participation in the Battle for Atlantis, and we are on the eve of the big game against Notre Dame, and just a big college football Saturday. So I think people know the results, but the three or four main results that affect USC, I guess. Michigan had a big win in the horseshoe against Ohio State, catapulting them into the top two of the college football playoff seeding, knocking Ohio State out and knocking them from their unbeaten perch. Clemson dropped a second game on the season to South Carolina, means the consecutive week South Carolina, which was 6-4, knocked off a top five ranked Tennessee team and then a top whatever eight ranked Clemson team. That basically effectively eliminated the ACC from contention from the college football playoff. And then LSU, something like this might happen. They lost to Texas A&M in their season finale. They still are going to represent the SEC West in the SEC championship game against Georgia this weekend, but they are no longer a contender for the college football playoff, and they were actually ahead of SC in last week's rankings. And obviously everyone knows the outcome of the USC Notre Dame game, which USC won, and just today the new college football playoff rankings got dropped. Nick, you have been pretty critical of this committee in the past. What are your thoughts on the rankings?
Yeah, definitely remain critical. I think we talked about the LSU thing at length last week, but they were really only up there to keep the dream alive of putting two SEC teams in the playoffs, right? Because they fell nine spots, right? They lost one game and fell nine spots, whereas Clemson lost one game to South Carolina and they fell one spot. Right. So obviously, like, LSU got kind of blown out and Clemson's game was close. And South Carolina, you know, they're a decent opponent. They're number 19. But I don't understand it's almost like they're putting LSU back to where they kind of should be now after keeping them artificially high. But never understood that. And it was good to see them go down. What else? I thought it was really interesting that the Boo Corrigan, the representative for the committee, he came out and said today that even though Alabama and Ohio State both don't play next week, that he would not rule out Alabama jumping Ohio State if USC were to somehow lose. How that would happen, like, and how they would justify that, I have no idea. But clearly they're trying to keep Bama in striking distance. They're still ahead of Tennessee, which is absurd because Bama hasn't played anybody really good in the SEC other than Tennessee, and Tennessee won the head-to-head. Tennessee lost that game to Georgia. Bama didn't have to play Georgia. What else is there? I don't like that South Carolina is ahead of Notre Dame, right? Like, Notre Dame destroyed Clemson. South Carolina barely beat them. And you know, Notre Dame, they dropped several spots, I think six spots after losing to USC in a, you know, USC controlled the game, but it wasn't a blowout. So I don't know what the justification is for that. So yeah, I guess still, I still have my concerns of, I have no idea what their logic is for any of this stuff. There's no clear criteria and they seem to be making it up on the fly.
So yeah, I you know, echo all your sentiments there. It does, I guess, the open question would be, what would happen? I think we both would agree, probably no matter what, Georgia and Michigan are in.
Yep.
The question is, what would happen if TCU were to lose? I think it, do we both agree if SC loses, they're out? They're not in.
I agree with that. I'm not sure that should be the case. So I read an interesting article, like, if these are the top four after the end of the season, shouldn't they just do the rankings now for the playoff, no matter what happens in the championship week? Because these other teams, like the Ohio States and the Alabamas, don't have to play a game.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd be essentially rewarding them for sitting at home and penalizing the team by dropping them for losing in the championship week. Obviously, like, if USC were to lose, the reality is they definitely would be out. But I thought it was a pretty compelling argument, actually.
You know, it is a weird, I think just it sets up so oddly that the top four teams in the college football playoff are all playing in their conference championship games. That part's not surprising, but teams ranked 5 through 8, none of them are playing in their college, right, in their conference championship game. And then the next three, Clemson, Kansas State, and Utah are. So yeah, it is just, it's a bit of a weird year that you would have all these teams ranked in the top, you know, from 5 to 8, all essentially contenders to move into that top four. And they're not, they have, you know, they're not playing in conference championship games. So that's a little odd. I'd have to look back historically and see if there's precedent for that. Yeah, it is weird though, that, you know, a team like Alabama, for example, could sit home, SC could lose a nail biter to Utah, and Alabama would somehow jump two teams and jump in to the top spot without playing anybody. And with their best win of the season, I guess, being Texas, according to the college football playoff and AP rankings, because their other best one is Mississippi State, and they only have two top 25 wins. You know, and this is something, getting back to what I discussed last week a little bit, this is kind of like a footnote, but, you know, that Fresno State would be ranked right now, I believe, if Hayner had not gotten hurt against USC, they would now be probably, they would have won those other two games. They'd be 10-2 now heading into their conference championship game. I think that, you know, if you look at Texas San Antonio, they're ranked number 23 in the AP poll right now. I think likely Fresno State would be ranked ahead of them. Tulane is ranked number 18. I think I really think Fresno State would be kind of on par with them. You know, so they could be a top 20 team. So SC, yep, would have beaten UCLA and Fresno State, UCLA, Oregon State. The other weird thing, you know, just looking from a Pac-12 perspective, it is odd, right? You know, USC is a one loss team in the Pac-12. There are 3 2 loss teams, Washington, Oregon, and Utah. Nobody beat of those top four. Nobody beat more than one of those schools, except for UCLA, who beat Washington and Utah. You know, Oregon, there's a lot of non-playing. Utah didn't play Washington. USC didn't play Oregon or Washington. Washington just didn't have a lot of those games. The one they did have was against Oregon. They won. And, you know, Oregon's best win is against Utah. I guess their second best win is against UCLA, but their UCLA is not in that, you know, that top, essentially first place, second place, the three-way tie for second place. All right, let's talk a little bit about the game. Let's talk a little bit about Ohio State, Michigan first. Sure. Do you think that performance by Michigan is enough that people should seriously be thinking, maybe Georgia is not a lock on that number one seed, depending on performances here in the conference championship games, certainly in light of the fact that now Georgia is going to be going up against a weaker LSU team. Michigan is, I mean, they're playing Purdue, right? I mean, this is like a terrible matchup for the Big Ten. The Big Ten is messed up with the East-West thing. I think they're scrapping that when USC and UCLA come aboard. I believe that's the plan. But yeah, do you think there's any scenario where Michigan has a legit argument to say, look, we actually belonged at the number one spot above you, Georgia?
I don't, just given the way it shook out, right? Like Michigan would have had to jump them this week because Purdue is ranked lower than LSU, right? So I think if Michigan did jump them this week and then both Georgia and Michigan won next week, Georgia could have jumped them back, right? But because Georgia is still at one, I think Georgia, no matter what happens next week, if they both, or I should say, if they both win, Georgia will be ahead of Michigan, you know, no matter what the margin of victory is on those games. But I do think it's kind of interesting. Like Georgia's resume seems to be kind of deteriorating a little bit, right? Like on paper, I guess they got that South Carolina win and that win's improving, but Oregon didn't close the season strong.
Right? Although they did. I mean, that was a 46-point margin. So that's a,
yeah,
that's right, a kick in the butt. You know, that was like the high point of the Georgia, buzzsaw.
Right, right. So, you look at Georgia's wins, right? Like margin was great, but, you know, Tennessee at 7, they have Oregon at 16, and then they've got this Mississippi State win and the South Carolina win. So it's a strong resume. Michigan, on the other hand, has, you know, Penn State, which is 8, and that's pretty close to Georgia's Tennessee win, and they're at 7. They've got that Ohio State road win on top of it. Georgia has nothing that can compete with that, right? I guess Georgia has a little bit deeper of a resume when you consider, you know, the Oregon win, the South Carolina win, and the Mississippi State win. It almost seems like the committee threw Mississippi State in the rankings just to give all these SEC schools an extra, like, quote unquote, ranked win, right? Because, you know, Mississippi State, they beat Ole Miss, right? But they haven't beaten a ranked opponent all year, right? And their marquee non-conference win was against Arizona. Like, it's not a good resume. The other thing too that I noticed is that they seem to like really value head-to-head in all of the rankings except the Alabama versus Tennessee thing, right? So they put Oregon State one spot ahead of Oregon. They put Florida State one spot ahead of LSU. They put Bama one spot ahead of Tennessee, despite that head-to-head, and Tennessee having to play Georgia while Bama didn't. So it kind of seemed to me like they really valued the head-to-head in terms of the, you know, marginal stuff on these rankings, except in Alabama's case where they just threw it out so they could elevate Bama to 6, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely the case. And I think the only justification there, I mean, real true justification is just that Hooker's out for the season for Tennessee. So if they were the team that somehow got to leapfrog Ohio State, although that would be kind of like, I'm not sure how mystifying as well. I mean, Tennessee has an interesting resume. I don't think it's as strong as Ohio State's, but it's an interesting resume. But they would not have their starting quarterback to play in the college football playoff. So, you know, that's something that needs to, I guess, be part of the equation. But if you're kind of on the outside looking in anyway, yeah, Tennessee should be ahead of Alabama. There's no, you know, there's not really, to me, a serious question, which is funny because I know very few people have really, I know Clay Travis had talked about it a little bit. I mean, there are not a ton of people really getting into that discussion. And I think, you know, some of this, I know Sagarin has Alabama ranked highly in his metrics, but, you know, if you just go by, you know, who they beat, who they didn't beat, Tennessee has the better resume. And I think a little bit of this is just the kind of reputation of Alabama's program for the last decade and a half under Nick Saban, which they're riding off of. You know, those are, you know, this is, they're the marquee program and they're the standard by which everyone else is judged. If not for that, you know, Tennessee has a more impressive resume, in my opinion.
One quick question to you. What do you make of the statement by the committee guy saying it's not necessarily the case that Ohio State would stay ahead of Alabama this weekend?
Obviously, that makes no sense. I mean, the biggest, if you really want to grasp at a straw, right, you could say, oh, Utah lost to Florida and Florida lost Alabama. You know, I guess that's the straw you're grasping at. I mean, it's a pretty rough argument to make.
Or like if Purdue blows out Michigan or something. I mean, right? And it like makes that loss look even worse for Ohio State. I guess, right? But
yeah, when
you say stuff like that, right? Like you're just going to get all of the conspiracy theories out there, right? Of the committee being a sham, right?
Right. Absolutely. Okay, let's talk about our game a little bit. So you were a little more nervous about this. You thought it was going to be a coin flip type game. What'd you think I guess if SC would have really messed up in the fourth quarter, it could have turned into that kind of game because we again got ourselves caught in the situation where the only way we could stop the other team was by turnover, which seems to be the case like midway through the third quarter of these games. It's like, that's it. Defense is done except for turnovers. We're not forcing anybody to punt. But obviously there's a lot more to this game than that. And the offense was pretty brilliant at times. So what were your thoughts about the matchup and what surprised you? What didn't surprise you?
Yeah, you were a lot more right about this one than me. You were probably a few points off from nailing the exact final score, I think, on both sides.
Yeah, so I think I said 34-24, and so it was 38-27. So it was a little off, but it was in general kind of what I was anticipating, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, SC really controlled the game, right? I mean, they kind of had that lead, around 10 points the whole game and score when they needed to. They built it up in the first quarter, and then quarters two through four were essentially draws, right, in each one.
Yep.
I thought the ground game just really controlled it with Jones. That was a really impressive performance. The line blocked well, but he also was really good at finishing runs and falling forward. I thought he had a really strong overall game. Caleb just – the pass pro wasn't great, and he just – did his magical thing, right? Extending plays and, the rushing really showed through in this one. But even his ability to, throw on the run and not take sacks, right? Like part of the beauty of Caleb, right? If you have a play and, Caleb extends the play, avoids the sack and throws it away, it shows up as an incompletion in the stats, right? But that saves you yardage. Versus if you have a statue quarterback like a Matt Barkley type and he takes a sack, he doesn't have any completions. His completion percentage might be slightly better. But, your team's way worse, right? Like Caleb just runs out of so many sacks. And in that one crazy play where he kind of like, stepped up, rolled back and, started running and then ran across the field and avoided tons of would-be tacklers. It was pretty just emblematic of his overall game and season. So he was awesome. I think he secured the Heisman and absolutely deserves it. His value to this team is ridiculous. I know we discussed offline comparing his overall value and importance to winning to like Reggie Bush, and he's just higher. Like Reggie is kind of more of a, you could say Reggie's more of a human highlight reel and we're never going to see anybody like him again. I think that's true, but just the importance of the quarterback position, I don't know where they would be without him. Just the defense too. Like, again, I think they struggled, did a good job stuffing the run. They've done that a few times this year where they've gone up against a team that thinks they can just run all over them. And they've actually held up well against it. But this passing defense, I think really the last several weeks has not been good. And this Drew Pine guy is not a great quarterback and he kind of picked them apart for most of that game. So I think that's a major concern.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty amazing to like that. You're looking up, there's a point in the third quarter where I think SC is up, if I remember correctly, something like 24-7 or something like that. And yet DuPont hasn't thrown any complete pass yet.
Right.
So yeah. That part was weird. The offense is terrific. And you cover Caleb Williams. He's going to win. I mean, it's funny to see the Heisman odds just changing in real time. And we kind of saw that coming into this week. And, you know, we knew if Ohio State struggled against Michigan, that Stroud was going to his Heisman odds were going to kind of diminish. You know, Stroud hasn't had like marquee games to really to display his prowess as a quarterback, and he had that opportunity against Michigan and kind of just went by the wayside. Caleb really, you know, he just did it. He pulled it off. I have to say too, with Lincoln Riley's, he is just a magician as a play caller. The difference between just to get to the level of having a competent offensive coordinator is one thing, but my gosh, we're way beyond that. And he sees things and openings and he does actually save some interesting plays for some big games. So I'm kind of curious what he has in store for Utah, but we scored 42 points against Utah the first time around. We'll talk about that.
There's no doubt too, right? Like that with the play calling, like they had this one formation that I was like, okay, I don't know what they're going to do. Don't have a ton of receivers. I think they had like a diamond or triangle kind of at the top of the screen. Right. And I think it was like a 3rd and 2 or something. I'm like, okay, no idea what he's going to do. He calls this bubble screen to Malik Brown, and it was the absolute perfect play, right? Like the D-back. There's one D-back that was blocked, and the other was like playing deeper to the point where he got caught up in the wash between the other, wide receiver that was blocking, and it went for 12 yards. Now I'm like, I didn't see that at all, but you know, Lincoln just saw it, immediately went to it, right? And it was super successful, right? So, blown away. Like he's just on a different level than, you know, even Lane Kiffin.
Yeah. Oh, he's, I mean, I don't even think now there's Lane Kiffin today and there's Lane Kiffin when he was at SC. Lane Kiffin today is a very different.
That's also true. Yeah.
You know, when he was at SC, our offense had all kinds of problems, a lot of problems. And he got very much fascinated with trying to force feed the ball to certain receivers, trying to, you know, get them awards. Yeah, there's actually, maybe before the end of the podcast, I'll if I can find it, but there's a YouTube up of somebody doing an analysis, a really bright football person who knows what they're talking about, doing kind of just a, you know, analysis of what we've been doing on offense. And he had some really good insights on plays that Lincoln Riley was implementing. Okay. That's the good part. The defense, man, it was frustrating because, there was a point, you know, in those last two, the game was basically over, and Notre Dame just kind of knew they needed to like throw the ball every down, and that's not their game. You know, they're a power running team, and we kind of shut that down, and they knew that they couldn't do that to try to win the game, and yet we're still leaving. Like Mayer was wide open for that final touchdown, and we just ran right up the middle of the field, right in between like our high cover two safeties, and just nobody picked him up. And just too much stuff like that, you know, and it is, I don't know if it's just, you know, guys don't understand exactly what they're supposed to be doing. It's just not entirely clear to me, but the defense in a game like that situation, you know, when they had several opportunities to like end the game, period, game's over, start of the fourth quarter. And they didn't really do it, you know, and it's something that's going to be, you know, if to the extent if we can beat Utah, and which is a question mark, I'm not saying they will, but if we could, and you get into the college football playoff, you're running into these situations over and over. You want to kind of like, hey, let's end this game if we can. We couldn't do against Utah the first time around, obviously. We'll see about this Friday in Vegas. So let's talk about that a little bit. Utah's a funny team because when they have really kind of beat down some of the weaker teams that they've played in ways that SC hasn't, maybe just because their defense is better. So when Utah, you know, this past week, they just completely smoked Colorado. And before that, they, you know, against Arizona, they won by 25 in a game that SC kind of struggled with. Earlier in the season, they, you know, they went to Tempe, beat Arizona State by 21. SC kind of had issues there. When Oregon State came, that's obviously a complete different situation going up to Corvallis and Oregon State going out to Salt Lake City. But they really smoked Oregon State in that game. On the other hand, when they've played the tougher teams at Florida, they couldn't pull that together. At UCLA kind of handled them well. At Washington State, they didn't have rising for that game. It was a real struggle for them, but they did pull it out to their credit. And at Oregon, man, that was a game where they had such a great opportunity to win that game with Bo Nix, who was clearly banged up, couldn't do a lot, wasn't very mobile, and they just couldn't get the offense going the right way. So it's kind of a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde team for Utah. I know the Colorado game was on the road. That was by far their, I think, best road performance. Maybe Arizona State was. But, you know, when they've played the stronger teams on the road, Florida, UCLA, Washington State, and Oregon, they're 1-3 in those games, and the Washington State game, they won by 4 points. Now, this is not a true road game. This is a neutral side field, but they're away from home. So, conversely, SC, you know, has actually played pretty decently on the road this season. So what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, lots unpacked there. I agree with you that Utah's home road splits are more drastic than the average team. You know, you mentioned it, like, losing in Florida was not good. And yet the at UCLA, like, UCLA controlled that game, and Oregon, I think, is not a great team. And Utah had every opportunity to win that game and couldn't do it.
Especially not a great team when Bo Nix is hurt.
Yeah. Oh, there's no doubt. Right. You know, but then, like, even they played Georgia week one, got absolutely spanked. Like, I think that, and Oregon, like, probably should have lost to Washington State too. So, like, that Oregon team, they were a lot closer to like 7-5, and I think people want to admit. But yeah, like, I was a little surprised at the line, how small it was. Like, it's,
and I'm, but by the way, we have to say offline, I predicted it would be closer to, I think, even 4, 5, or 6, and you said 2.5. So you were much closer.
Yeah, and I guess it's been bet up to what I thought it would be at, like, you know, 2.5, 3. But it was down at, I think it opened at 1. But yeah, a lot of it is Vegas still just, you know, does not, they keep fading USC every week, right? They're like, USC's turnover margin's unsustainable. Fade them, fade them, fade them. And USC keeps burning them with it, right? Like, USC's 8-4 against the spread now. And Utah, like, because they blow teams out and have really good net yards per play, Vegas loves them, right? Like, they, you know, it's always kind of like they were favored in Eugene, right? That says a lot. I know Bo Nix was banged up, but that was a little bit surprising to me. Yeah, in terms of the matchup too, like, I think both crowds will, like, both teams will bring, you know, their fans will show up. It'll be a pretty split crowd, I think, in Vegas. I feel good about our ability to stop their run. Our run D's been good against good rushing teams, but I don't think that Alex Grinch has learned anything in terms of how to stop good tight ends. Like, Mayer, you know, there was one play where Max Williams, who's like 5'8", was single covering Michael Mayer, and Mayer scored a touchdown, and Max Williams had no chance. Like, Kincaid, like, he was trying to jam him with Tuli Tuipulotu, and bringing, you know, that was because of that, like, Tuli wasn't able to rush the passer effectively on those certain downs. And I just have no idea what he's doing. I don't think he's really learning anything. So I have concerns. Like, I think we might get into another shootout with these guys again. And when that happens, I mean, if they get the ball last and go for two, like, you lose, right? So I don't think it's a gimme game at all. I have a lot of concerns about this one. I think I'd probably pick us to win. But I don't think it's a slam dunk like lots of USC fans think it is.
No, I don't think it's a slam dunk either. And I guess we will do the picks at the end. But no, and have you now, they have apparently, because of injuries, they have a backup quarterback playing running back. Jaquindon Jackson, who's been really strong. I mean, he's averaging like 6.5 yards a carry. They're a banged up team in general, but it does seem like, from what we're hearing, Kincaid will be giving it a go at tight end. I'd be shocked if he didn't play. Rising will definitely play quarterback. Obviously, he was banged up after the SC game. Rising has struggled, by the way, until this last week against Colorado. But in the previous three or four games, he was not as strong as he had been earlier in the season. And you see against Oregon, he was 21 for 38 with three picks, well, only 170 yards. Against Stanford, not a great defense. 20 for 33, which is not bad, but then for only 219 yards. Against Arizona, which is obviously not a great defense at all, he was only 13 for 25 for 151. So, and even though, you know, they were able to win that game kind of handily. So he got back at it this past weekend, 17 for 19 for 234, three touchdowns, no interceptions, but they're playing Colorado. Colorado's last game of the season. So I'm curious about that. Obviously, he was dynamite against us the first time, but of course, the first time he was throwing the ball almost, I mean, he threw 30 completed pass and whatever, 20 went to Kincaid. I do worry that we will overcover Kincaid and leave one of the receivers open for deep plays. I guess we'll just have to see about that. You know, that defense is just such a, you just can't rely on them much, and we'll just have to see how the game works itself out. Okay, so I guess we'll do picks on that late. I guess we'll pick all of the, maybe at the end of this pod, we'll pick all of those games. Let's switch over to basketball briefly here. We're starting to head into that, those early conference games. We play two of them in December, or you know, November, December, before the conference season starts in earnest in January. So SC has got tomorrow night, which is Wednesday, at Cal, and then on Sunday, Oregon State at home. So basically, they first two conference games SC gets are against two teams basically picked to finish last and second to last in the conference. Oregon State has actually looked decent so far, although I think they've lost twice now to Portland State. But Cal is winless. Now they've played decent teams, Kansas State, TCU, Clemson, but they also lost at home to Southern. They lost at home to UC Davis. They lost to UC San Diego, and they also lost at home to Texas State. So, they're relying on still Joel Brown and Kwani from last year, but they've added Devin Askew from Modern Day. Askew has not exactly been setting the world on fire. Any thoughts on this game for tomorrow night?
Yeah, I don't think we'll have too much trouble there. Askew just went there to get his shots, basically, after not getting his shots at Kentucky and at Texas. This is school 3 in 3 years for him. I'm like a little bit surprised that Cal is not like substantially better than Oregon State. I know people are going to make a big deal about that Oregon State almost win over Duke, but I don't think Duke is really all that good. Jordan Pope's impressed me for Oregon State, the prolific prep kid. I think he was a legit get for them and someone you could easily transfer up to a better school. Don't really anticipate any problems for SC in either of those games.
Just knowing SC, I have a feeling it'll be ugly at times, but SC, I think we'll pull out both games I'm not even sure what the line is. I'm assuming the line on Cal is about 8 points. I mean, I think, you know, it's SC might cover that. I'm not sure. The Oregon State line, because it's at Galen, maybe closer to 14, 15. And I think SC potentially could cover that as well, just depending on how things go. Just a couple notes on since we last talked, we got to see the finals of the PK games. I know we already mentioned just how strong UConn and Purdue had looked, and they certainly reinforced that, kind of the weakness potentially of Duke. It is pretty amazing. Zach Edey has, like, the way that he's able to dominate some of these games, you know, Purdue beating and just it just being handily beating Gonzaga the way that they did, you know, 18-point win. Even Edey was really toying with him. After that, I was like, I was expecting them to beat Duke by 20, and I guess it got up to 19. But gosh, you know, it's a little bit hard to kind of believe, because they're starting two freshmen at the guard spots, Brayden Smith and Fletcher Loyer, and these were not like top 50 recruits at the guard. So
yeah,
what they're doing here is, I mean, you really, you know, you have to hand it to Matt Painter. I mean, this is what they're doing is pretty impressive.
Yeah, Painter's great. I mean, he's done it year in, year out without recruiting the top guys. And he finds guys that fit his system, and he finds these huge, you know, players who aren't really tailored for the NBA, right? So they end up being really good in college and not, you know, leaving early, right? Like Edey comes to mind. They had Isaac Haas back in the day. They had AJ Hammonds, right? Like, they keep getting these, like, 7-1 to 7-5 guys who can just take over, and Edey's probably the best that he's had, right? Like, he's a legit.
Edey's definitely the best. I mean, what Edey's turned into, he's definitely the best. I mean,
yeah,
there have been other guys that have been really, really effective, but Edey's able to now he's added a scoring component that the other guys didn't really have.
Yeah.
And I mean, he
makes free throws too. Like, he's like 76% from the line, so you can't even foul him. Like, it's,
And yes, you know, just probably. what he did against Gonzaga, it was really something to behold. And you know, I mean, I guess, you know, just, you know, talking it again, it looks, you know, you'd mentioned on the last podcast you thought UConn should be number two in the country after Houston. Hard to disagree with that. I think Texas's win over Gonzaga doesn't look quite as good now because of how much Gonzaga has struggled. Virginia's playing Michigan tonight. That's going to be an interesting game, and I'm kind of curious to see how that one shakes out. But, in this early going, we certainly – Houston's not a surprise, but Purdue and UConn are really interesting. And who knows? We'll see if Virginia keeps it going. Any thoughts on that? Did you watch that 4-overtime game between Alabama and North Carolina?
I didn't catch it. I think Bama ended up pulling it off, right?
They did. And it was a true back and forth. I mean, it was no one ever got up by like more than three in any of the 4 overtimes. I mean, these teams were like dead even, which to me says, okay, by the end of the season, Bama's probably going to be better because, you know, they've got to integrate pieces. Brandon Miller, who is, you know, a freshman. And, you know, they're still integrating a guy like Mark Sears, who is a key in earlier games. I don't think he was he actually led them in scoring against North Carolina at 24 points. But I think Bama is going to end up being a top 10 team. North Carolina, I'm not sure, is a top 10 team. I mean, maybe they are. Caleb Love had a huge game. Baycott hasn't looked as good as I thought he was going to look. And they haven't necessarily gotten out of Pete Nance what I think they were totally expecting in some of these bigger games. You know, he had a huge game against Portland, but against Iowa State and Alabama, he combined for 13 points. Just wasn't a huge factor in those games. So I know you didn't see him, but by the way, Seth Trimble finally got in the game in overtime. Didn't do very much at all. So he's not really a major player for North Carolina right now either. But Alabama is it's an interesting team because I don't think they're not as athletic or as talented as Arkansas, but you know, it's like you have Mark Sears and you have Brandon Miller, right? And you have Mark Sears, and then you have Burnett and Quinterly and Jaden Bradley. So you got a lot of guards coming at you. And then they got guys like Bediako, who's pretty good too. So, and they have Noah Gurley. So they're a talented team, and I think they're probably going to get better as the year goes on, is my guess, and they'll be a top 10 team. So I don't know. I was very high last year on the SEC. They looked great until the very end. They got to the tournament, and they didn't quite perform to the level I thought they might. So we'll have to see about it this year, but it's going to be an interesting race to see who wins at SEC this year, because there's so many talented teams. But at the same time, the Big Ten could be really tough because of just how great Purdue's looked. And you have, you know, Indiana, and you have Illinois, and you have Wisconsin, and you have Iowa, and Ohio State, and yada, yada, yada. So I think it's going to be a very competitive year this year, and I don't think you're going to have any team running away with it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Michigan's look worse than expected. I expect Virginia to take care of them tonight. I think that line's pretty small. It's like 3.5. I was surprised by that. Obviously, like, you know, home run's a big deal, but it still seems kind of low to me, given what the teams have shown. What do you think about the Duke thing? Like, do you think it's a roster issue? Do you think John Shire's totally unprepared? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I don't know if it's a Ross. I'm sorry. I'm not sure if it's a Shire issue. I don't think this. Maybe it's a combination. It's hard when all of your best players, but for like one, is a, you know, one or two are freshmen, and they're not dominant freshmen. So, like, let's say, right, like the big three in this class, right, were supposed to be, Lively and Whitehead and Filipowski, right? Probably, yeah, maybe in that order, maybe Whitehead ahead of Lively. Well, Lively and Whitehead have been major disappointments so far, and really are not contributing hardly anything at all. Filipowski has actually played pretty well, but he's not a dominant physical presence out there. So you don't really, you have all these like big time recruits, but they're not like physically dominant, and they're freshmen. Interestingly, yeah, the guy that's kind of been the most intriguing at times has been Proctor, who's, I think, was the Australian.
Yep.
And, you know, he had 16 points against Purdue, but in the prior game, he was held scoreless against Xavier. I mean, he's a freshman. He's going to be up and down. He really looks the part at times. Mark Mitchell looks really impressive. He's out there. He's long and, but he's, you know, look, those are not guys that at this level are going to be like dominating games. So they don't really have a dominator in that freshman group right now. So yeah, I think it is a personnel issue to a great extent. And, you know, if you're relying on, and then other than that, you're relying on guys like Jeremy Roach and Jacob Granderson and Ryan Young. Those are not, I mean, they're kind of just like ho-hum talents. So they're not you know, it's a mix of, look, I really think, you know, a guy like, if you have Whitehead and Lively around an extra season, maybe those guys are just come, you know, they're just blowing teams out next year, but they're going to leave. So the question is, do they get to where they need to be before the end of the season? I think it may be more interesting for Duke next year if Proctor and Mitchell are back on the team. Maybe Filipowski is as well, or Filipowski is as well. I'm just not sure. So I think it's a personnel issue at one level. Now, there were times, you know, it's funny, where Krzyzewski was able to kind of take teams that I had like similar personnel problems and still get it to work. And I'm thinking about the team from about 4 years ago that was relying heavily on Cassius Stanley. I mean, Stanley looked really good for them. He had a really nice season. I think that was the year when Vernon Carey as a freshman just really just killed it. And, you know, Carey's not like a huge talent as far as like NBA level, but at the college level, he was just able to get it done. And then, you know, they also had Matthew Hurt and he helped, but Krzyzewski was kind of able to kind of, I don't know, work that a little bit more, and maybe Shire hasn't quite figured that out yet. Yeah, I mean, it can be really tricky when you don't quite have all those pieces lining up in the way that you wanted to. Now, and I say that the very next year, you know, Krzyzewski had that team with Kobe Johnson's brother Jalen Johnson and DJ Stewart and you know, that Mark Williams, and Jeremy Roach was a freshman there, and that team stunk it up. I mean, really stunk it up. I guess, you know, they were kind of making a run in the ACC tournament before. I think there was like, they had, I think they got COVID or something, had to stop. Anyway, the answer to the question is, I think it's a combination, but I think it's mostly personnel, not Shire yet. We'll see though over time. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that 100%. Like these guys, their one and done just aren't at the level of like a Paolo Banchero or Jason Tatum or Zion. Like that guy doesn't exist in this class at all. Derek Lively's averaging under 3 points a game. I don't think like Coach K, especially in the later years, was some tactician. I think Shire like might even run better sets than Coach K. I don't think Coach K would be able to coach this team to like, you know, some like a top five level or anything like that. At the same time, like, I think Duke just doing the whole keep it in the family thing was ridiculous, right? Like, why don't you go hire Nate Oates if you're Duke, right? Like, why are you giving it to John Shire, who's never coached a game, right? Like, they seem access, right? Like,
that's right. It's Krzyzewski can be the shadow coach, right? Or it's the shadow GM or whatever. Yeah. I mean, that's clearly what he set this situation. I mean, look, and they, upon that, they built these two number one classes. It could potentially work out for next season, depending on who sticks around. Now, Lively and Whitehead are not going to. I don't know about the other guys, how their draft prospects look right now. But if you did have a situation where, I mean, look, Roach is still a junior. He's not a great player, but he's a junior. You have Mark Mitchell, Tyrese Proctor. If Filipowski comes back, you put that together with next year's recruiting class, they could really have something going at that point. But if those guys leave, then they're going to be kind of left in the same situation. And I'm just, you know, it's funny, like, look, Kay was able to get to the national semifinal last year doing this stuff, you know, and having this team with Ben, you know, but he had Banchero, you know.
Banchero.
if he didn't have Banchero, and it's just, if he had, instead of Banchero, Derek Lively, no, he's not, they're not making it, right? So you kind of need, I guess you kind of need that level of guy. But I think in this day and age, you're better off kind of pursuing more of like maybe what Chris Beard has done in like combination of recruiting high school players, recruiting transfers. You know, you certainly can't second guess what Kelvin Simpson has done because he's just been killing it. But, you know, like these, I think you're going to be seeing, it's going to be more and more likely that it's going to be a combination of the two. Kansas has been able to kind of had success with just kind of keeping it in house, although they did bring in Remy Martin last year. So I guess we forget that, but I think you're going to be better off doing kind of like a combination of, you know, build that foundation from within, then bring some players from the outside. Of course, Arkansas is doing just the opposite. They're building the foundation from the outside, you know, like, they're bringing in all these other outside players. Before we hop off of basketball, I a couple games. Arizona is at Utah on Thursday. UCLA is at Stanford. And we'll maybe talk about Sunday too. Any thoughts on what do you think those two games are going to look like?
I think UCLA probably beats Stanford. You know, they're not a perfect team, but Stanford, again, they're just really disappointing. I think it's hard to like bet on them even at home in that game. Arizona, Utah was the other one, right? Salt Lake. I think Utah's, they've had a decent start to the year. They were pretty competitive against Mississippi State. But they did lose that game to Sam Houston State, and in Arizona, they've just, you know, they won the Maui tournament, right? Umar Ballo looks like a Pac-12 Player of the Year candidate. I think his development's been remarkable. Certainly, like, they have holes. If their guards don't shoot well, they turn it over a lot. But it's hard to bet against them until we really see them, like, get blown out, right?
Yeah. No, I think UCLA and Arizona are gonna they'll win. Okay, let's do some picks here in football.
Sure.
We got the Big 12 championship game, Kansas State, number 10 now, against TCU. TCU, 2.5-point favorite, only 2.5-point favorite. The game is at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Jerry's World. What's your pick there?
Yeah, got to go with TCU here. I don't think they'll blow them out. Like, Vegas keeps fading TCU, and, you know, eventually it seems like that's going to catch up to them. But I think in, like, you know, it's a one game. They're going to be super motivated for the playoff. And they've got, like, enough talent. Like, Quentin Johnson's an NFL guy. Duggan's playing well at quarterback. And with the game at Jerry World, it's basically a home game for those guys too, right? In the same, you know, it's in DFW. So I'll take TCU.
Yeah, I think I would lay the points here. I'd take TCU. SEC Championship, which is on 4 o'clock Eastern on CBS. LSU, Georgia game is at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. Line is 17.5 for Georgia. I'll just throw it. I think Georgia will win handily. I don't know if they're cover because of weird scoring stuff. I wouldn't bet it, but I don't think there's a chance in the world that Georgia's going to lose this game.
Yeah, I'll take LSU in the points. I think Georgia wins the game, kind of controls the game, but I like that it's 17.5 because let's say it's bouncing between 10 and 17. If Georgia gets a late score, you could still cover with that half a point. So I would take LSU, but I don't really think they have the horses to pull it off.
Do you want to do picks for the American Athletic and ACC? Do you have opinions on those games?
I don't. Do you?
No, I don't. I do not. So let's skip them. Okay. Purdue, Michigan, Big Ten final on Fox, 8 o'clock Eastern on Saturday. Michigan 16.5-point favorite. I actually think Purdue might cover here. If I was forced to bet, I'd pick Purdue to cover, Michigan to win. Where are you at on that?
Yeah, like Purdue to cover. Think they actually have a shot to pull it off, just because Michigan's coming off that emotional high against Ohio State. Purdue, with the exception of the Iowa game, has been pretty competitive in their losses. And, you know, they're going to be super motivated to get to New Year's Six, and Michigan is basically a lock for the playoffs. So I think it's close, but Michigan pulls it off probably late.
Okay. Friday night, our first of these games chronologically, but the last one we're going to cover. Pac-12 championship game, 8 o'clock Eastern time on Fox. USC is now currently at this moment, according to what I'm looking at, and the lines can be changing any time here, 3-point favorite, over under 67. So this would have the score at like a 30, 35-32, according to the line. Where are you on this one?
Yeah, I think we win by about a touchdown. You know, Vegas keeps fading us because of our turnover margin, but I think it's pretty real. Like, Caleb just doesn't turn it over. You know, I don't think that's a luck thing. I think the defense getting the turnovers is kind of a luck thing, but not really the offense's lack of turnovers. I thought we played them very competitively. Probably should have beat them in Utah. I don't think Utah, away from Rice Eccles, is the same team, and they're beat up. So it seems like a really good spot for us to win. I kind of expect the game flow to be similar to that Notre Dame game, I think, except Rising is a little bit more prolific than Pine. So maybe it's like a field goal closer. So I'll go SC 35-27.
Okay, I'm with you in general. I'm thinking here, 30. Let's go with this. Score doesn't make a ton of sense, but let's just say SC 38, Utah 34. 4-point victory for me. I think this will be a bit of a back and forth, and we're going to have to hold our breath. SC, I do think, figures out a way to pull this out, though. That's just my guess. Okay, anything else you want to cover before we get out of here?
I think I'm good. Just excited for conference championship weekend here. And kind of crazy that we're a game away from the playoff here. One thing. Brett McMurphy, this was kind of interesting. He tweeted out the lines of all the hypothetical playoff matchups.
Mm-hmm.
And Vegas views USC as the weakest team out of all these teams. He didn't include Alabama either, but he's got like USC as a 3.5 point underdog to TCU, an 8.5 point underdog against Ohio State, a 9 point underdog against Michigan, and let's see, they have Georgia. They do a 13.5 point underdog against Georgia. So thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. It doesn't shock me. I think they're shading SC. Well, I have a feeling they're shading SC by about four and a half points there. I think if you actually put this in front of gamblers like neutral field, TCU, USC, I don't think you'd see a lot of money going to TCU compared to USC. But that's just, you know, that's my guess.
Yeah.
And of course, we'll see how things go this weekend, obviously. And, you know, if SC looks really bad against Utah, it wouldn't make sense. But if they have a good game, who knows? I guess we've been waiting all season for the defense to kind of step up and like end the game in the fourth quarter against a good team. So maybe that finally happens. Who knows?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, big game Friday night, but before that, basketball's tomorrow night against Cal. So until then, everybody, until we talk to you again, fight on.
Fight on.